part three of the series Clarity and our use of the term racism. Sometimes wearing metal helmets and or body armor and carrying firearms and or bringing cannons and other weaponry that was unknown to the people whose lands they were encroaching upon, these foreigners with the pale skin wore out the welcome mats pretty quick. In many cases, if not most, the people they encountered either welcomed them or tolerated their arrival. But before long, they would learn of the treachery of the newcomers. In his book, The Black Indians, William Lorne Katz shares with us some of what Christopher Columbus, had to say about his encounters with Native people. Citing his October 12, 1492 diary entry, Katz informs us of the explorers taking of some natives by force. To quote from the Black Indians, "He started by shipping 10 chained Arawak men and women to Seville, Spain. He wrote enthusiastically to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella about the business possibilities. From here, in the name of the Blessed Trinity, we can send all the slaves that can be sold." Subsequently, he loaded 1,100 Taino men and women aboard 4 Spanish ships. Because of the crowding, Atlantic storms, and other conditions, only 300 arrived. Before Colon and his actions on behalf of Spain, there was Prince Henry. Tony Browder, in his work, Nile Valley, Contributions to Civilization, reveals Prince Henry of Portugal took the Africans and sold them as slaves in the ports of Portugal. He asked absolution for the seamen, and Pope Eugenia IV in 1442 granted the request. By 1452, Pope Nicholas V gave King Alfonso of Spain general powers to enslave so-called pagans. And of course, pagans meant the African who didn't yet know Christ. How is it that a human being believes he has a right to enslave, steal from, kidnap, brutalize, murder, and otherwise mistreat another human being? If a person is greedy, ruthless, and aggressive, that's about all that's needed. But in talking about the slave trade, imperialism, and colonialism ushered in and expanded by the dominant European countries, there's another element. The African scholar and historian John Henry Clark called it white nationalism. At some point, the French, English, Spanish, and other Europeans who were exhibiting their greed, ruthlessness, aggression, and so forth in Africa, the Americas, and elsewhere, noticed that they had something very obvious in common. A lack of pigment or whiteness. Of course, this shared paleness of skin had not served to mitigate in the least a propensity toward violence and frequent wars between and within the countries of Europe. But with regards to European contact with lands populated by people of color, rather, there was so much wealth to be made from the raw materials and from the sale of human beings, there had to be something other than the characteristically European, every man for himself way of doing things. The enslaving theft of land and resources, murders, and exterminations require some level of organization. The Christian churches and the Roman Catholic Church in particular provided leadership in this regard. We know, for example, that the Vatican served as a veritable referee in the early period of Spain's and Portugal's competition for reaping the riches of the so-called New World. We know from Nile Valley Contributions that so controlling was the power of the Vatican in the conduct of trade into Africa that in 1481, Edward IV of England asked the Pope for permission to trade in Africa. That Christianity played such a significant role institutionally in the slave trade, imperialism, and colonialism should not surprise us. When the various Europeans in Africa and the Americas looked at each other, it was not only whiteness they had in common, but also their belief in Jesus Christ and the concept of Christianity. To get a more concrete picture of how tightly whiteness and Christianity were entwined, consider the following passage from Stanley M. Elkin's Slavery, 2nd edition. According to the South Carolina Code of 1712, the punishment for offering any violence to any Christian or white person by striking or the like was a severe whipping for the first offense, branding for the second, and death for the third. Should the white man attack, be injured, or maimed, the punishment was automatically death. The same act provided that a runaway slave be severely whipped for his first offense, branded for his second, his ears cut off for the third, and castrated for the fourth. That concludes part three.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.